Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2002. Today's session is titled Leadership, Spirituality, and the Common Good, Session 2, Ethical Leadership, Part 1. It is presented by Bill Grace. The number is GRB2002-02. Let's listen in.
I'm from Seattle, Washington. I work with a nonprofit organization called the Center for Ethical Leadership. And this is the second in sort of a five-part series. And don't worry, because although it's part of the series, it's also a standalone session. But 2 days, or maybe it was yesterday, we talked about gracious space and the common good. And we said that that might be an important prerequisite to get into the challenging territory of ethical leadership. And we also said that ethical leadership sort of had two dimensions to it. One had to do with the interior part of our lives, and that's what we're going to look at this morning, or this afternoon. And tomorrow morning, we're going to be looking at the exterior life of the ethical leader. A colleague of mine puts it this way. He says it's really one thing. It's just the breath. The inhale is about integrity, and the exhale is about a commitment to justice. So that's what we're going to be taking a look at this morning, the inhale of integrity. What I'd like to sort of give you a sense for, probably in our 55 to 60 minutes this afternoon, probably going to hear me present for about 20 minutes. And I would like us to go through some activities. The first one will be one that you'll do privately. If you have a pen or a pencil, that's great. If you don't, I have a few I borrowed from registration and I need to get them back. It's a commitment of integrity. Okay, so you need to help me fix that. After some of that individual reflection, we're going to have some work in this large group, and then I think we'll open it up for discussion. So that's kind of how we're going to spend our next 55 minutes. I'd like to help to set a frame for a conversation about integrity and core values by just trying to define a couple terms that might be helpful. They get used a lot interchangeably, and I think that's just fine. But for today's discussion, I'd like to try to distinguish between them a little bit. And that is the difference between moral and ethical, or moral and ethics. I think, starting with moral, I think you could safely, this is a sort of a generalized statement, but I think it's in large part true about Western philosophy. I don't know enough about Eastern philosophy to say whether or not it affects, includes Eastern philosophy as well. But I think you could take 2,000 years of Western philosophy and boil it down to two moral obligations. So consider that for a moment. Take all of Western philosophy, and it really only asks us to be aware of two obligations and to try to be sensitive to those on a daily basis. The two moral obligations are, number one, to prevent harm. Good parents know that. Good teachers know that. Good pastors know that. Good spouses know that. One of our first moral obligations in life is to prevent harm. The second obligation is related to it, and that is, should the harm occur at our hand anyway, and no matter how good a parent we might have tried to have been, if you're like me, there were moments when you said, gee, I wish I wouldn't have said that, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And even though we try to prevent harm, we try not to cause harm, harm happens anyway by our hand or by our tongue, more than likely. And when that happens, the second obligation we have is to offer aid. So the first obligation is prevent harm. The second moral obligation we have is, should harm occur, especially by our hand, then we're responsible for offering aid. But in a moral context, we're responsible for offering aid even if we didn't do the harm. The clearest story in the tradition that many of us in this room share is the story of the Good Samaritan. Good Samaritan wandering down the road en route to wherever he might be going, happens across the half-dead, beat-up guy by the side of the road, and we don't even know his name. But the Good Samaritan understands an obligation to take care of that person. Harm has been done to that person, and we don't know who did that either, but that's not important to the Samaritan. The Samaritan understands that it's important to respond, and the Samaritan gives us an amazing bit of role modeling by not only bandaging that person's wounds, but taking that person to a place where they could be tended and nurtured, given the innkeeper money to do all of that tending, and said, if it costs more on my return trip, I'll pay the difference. That's remarkable. So the Good Samaritan story helps us to see those moral obligations in a crystal clear way. One other image about the moral realm that might be helpful. Imagine this. Imagine that there is a place called the moral realm, a physical place that we could visit. And imagine that we sign on board. We're feeling a little bit adventurous. So we sign on board a ship that would take us there. We sail across a small ocean. We've been out in the ocean for a couple of weeks, and we're really anxious to see some land. And there off in the distance, we begin to see this small sliver of land appearing on the horizon. And so we're all excited, and we begin to head for that sliver of land that begins to get larger and larger. And as we approach it, this particular body of land appears very unique in a couple ways. One, from a distance, it appears colorless. And so if we were to look out these windows here, and you can see the gray and brown of the road and the greens of the grass and trees around us, it's those color distinctions that would help us to go outside and navigate and not fall into the trench just outside of Koinonia and to make our way to dinner or to ice cream. In part, it's the relief that the difference in color provides that helps us to navigate. This particular continent, the moral continent, as we get closer and closer to it, we realize that it's in large part colorless. From a distance, it appears black and white, but as we get closer and closer, it's really many shades of gray. And the distinctions in the shades of gray are so minute that things begin to blend into each other. And as we step off the ship, we begin to get the feeling that this is going to be a very, very difficult continent to navigate. Many things in this continent are shades of gray, and very few on the moral continent are either black or white. The explorers of old knew that when they went to new places, they needed some reliable tools on hand to help them to navigate places they had not been before. And we would be wise to take some tools with us into the moral realm. And those tools that we would take into the moral realm to help us to navigate through these difficult choices, we would call those tools ethics. So one of the ways to look at moral is to consider it a realm. And in that realm, we're trying to prevent harm and offer mutual aid. And those decisions are very, very subtle at times. What does it mean to prevent harm as a good parent? What does it mean to offer aid? How do we begin to make decisions for the good of others? Those are difficult decisions. And one of the systems to help us in those difficult choices is ethics. So the first thing I'd like you to notice about ethics is that they're tools. I mentioned yesterday, the older I get, the more I see myself as sort of a blue-collar person. So I like the idea that ethics are practical tools, not pie-in-the-sky discussions that we might have in an academy somewhere on a hill, but they help us in the midst of life. The final thing I want to say about ethics is that in addition to being tools, ethics is always ultimately about behavior. Ethics is about behavior. In the moral realm, we can philosophize and make considerations and make judgments and begin to make choices, but in the ethical realm, the choices that we have made, what we're asked to do is to put them into action. So I like to tell people at this point, sort of tongue-in-cheek, If you want to know what my ethics are, be careful of my words. Because, you know, what if there isn't a Center for Ethical Leadership? What if I'm an out-of-work actor from Leavenworth? And one of the Holden staff just asked me to come up here and pretend and play a role and say something about ethics. Many of you don't know whether I'm an out-of-work actor or whether or not I work at a place that has something to do with ethics and leadership. So you would be wise to be careful of my words. In this age of spin, I could be trying to say all of the right things to win your favor. What won't fool you as much, it's not as likely to fool you as much as my words, is my behavior. So if you want to know what my ethics are, watch my behavior. Matter of fact, there's two documents I usually carry with me. I happen to have both in the village. If you really wanted to know what my ethics are, you ought to ask to consult these two documents. The first one is my calendar, and see how I spend my time. How I spend my time is a great expression of my ethics. The second document you ought to ask to take a look at is my checkbook. How I spend my money is another very powerful testimony of my ethics. So how I spend my time and how I spend my money will be clearer determinants for you if you want to know what my ethics are. Well, here's the rub. If you want to know what my ethics are, take a look at how I spend my time and how I spend my money. If you'd like to know what your ethics are, take a look at how you spend your time and how you spend your money. If you'd like to know what the ethics are of the county that you live in, ask yourself, metaphorically, how does the county spend its time and how does the county spend its money? In the county that I come from, it's county called King County, not originally named after Dr. King, but it bears his namesake now. In the county of King, 68% of the budget is spent, 68% of the budget and rising is spent on putting people in jail, keeping people in jail, and following up on people once they've left jail. About 40% of that 68, I think, has to do with keeping youth in prison. We're closing parks. We're eliminating human services. And if you'd like to know what King County's ethics are, you'd be wise not to listen to the rhetoric of council members and leaders in the county. And I know some of them, and I know it breaks their heart that this is true. But nonetheless, if leadership is in part about honesty, we would have to tell the truth and say that King County's ethics right now are questionable. And you see, that's a good thing, because as we begin to tell the truth about it, it's not an attempt to indict someone. It's an opportunity to say, well, here's what our ethics are as we look at our behavior. How is that in keeping with our preferred vision for our ethics? And if there's a gap between what we're doing and what our preferred vision is, that's a leadership opportunity. Leadership opportunity to close the gap. If you'd like to know what your church's ethics are, ask yourself, how does your church spend its time and how does your church spend its money? That's not to make anybody feel creepy. This is an opportunity to be aware. We begin to prevent harm and offer aid once we're aware. You know, I'm not a biblical scholar, but I just think it's interesting that some of the early miracles of Jesus had to do with helping the blind to see and the deaf to hear. And I'd like to think that in addition to being literal acts, they were metaphorical acts. You know, blessed are we if we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, because then we can do something about it. if we don't like what our ethics are individually and collectively, the good news is that we have the authority in our personal lives, we have the authority in a democracy to make changes. And that's the awakened life. So that's just a little bit on moral and ethics. Take a look at that handout I gave you and flip to the side with a little circle on it with a triangle in the middle. This is an attempt. Do we need some light in here? Thank you, Harold. If it gets too warm, we can turn them off later. The model that you see there, called the 4V model, was an attempt to, is based on some research interviewing individuals who are identified by a group called informed observers, usually members of the press, saying, who do you think are ethical leaders in our midst? Not historical figures. These were contemporary figures back in the mid-80s when the research was done. And the question was, could you take these lives of ethical leaders and look for some themes in their lives and begin to ask ourselves, if a person intentionally wanted to grow as an ethical leader, mature into ethical leadership, could you do it intentionally? Because 90% of the leaders that were interviewed indicated that their choice to be ethical, their choice to be morally responsible, was usually made before they were 13 years old. In large part due to the household that they grew up in. Well, the question I had is if you weren't fortunate enough to grow up in that household, if you weren't fortunate enough to have some early childhood experiences that began to create a trajectory for your life in that direction, could you, and unlike Paul, to have a sort of a miraculous conversion experience, short of those two, could you make intentional choices to grow as a person in an ethical context? And this 4V model is an attempt to point out a pathway. So it's a model, not the model. And there are 4Vs: values, vision, voice, and virtue. Yesterday we talked about the common good, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. But consider the first three Vs for a moment: values, vision, and voice, as it relates to ethical leadership. Okay, I was going to tell a story, but I want to save our time. So if you really want to hear it, I'll come back to it, but I'm going to press on. I'll make the point this way. Values, vision, and voice. If that was all that was required to be an ethical leader, a person would have some values, would have a vision for how a world or an institution might be different, and be able to claim their voice to help others to get on board with that vision, we would have to say that Adolf Hitler had those three in spades, right? Did he have some values? Did he have a vision for how Europe could be a different place? Was he able to claim his voice and animate an entire nation to do his bidding? Something's missing, right? Something's missing. And virtue at the center is a hint, because what it suggests is that if you track the other three on the pyramid, and we challenge ourselves as ethical leaders to say, how are my values in keeping? And yesterday we talked about the common good. So in this model, virtue stands in part for the common good. It also stands for courage. And we're going to be talking about courage in the fourth session, not tomorrow, but we'll skip a day. And because of Jubilee, we'll do that Friday. So virtue stands both for courage and the common good. An ethical leader then asks themselves, how are my values in keeping with the common good? And yesterday, we shared a definition for the common good that went something like this: liberty and justice for all, with an additional measure of mercy and compassion for the least fortunate and the most vulnerable. And that both of those were the moral commitments an ethical leader would subscribe to in trying to advance the common good. Liberty and justice for all, and all means all, as inclusive as we can imagine it. And even so, then additional measures of mercy and compassion for the least fortunate and the most vulnerable. And I hope that you can hear the gospel in all of that. So the ethical leader again asks, how are my values in keeping with that notion of the common good? How is my vision for an improved society or county or an institution or neighborhood? How is that in keeping with the common good? And finally, how is my voice or my actions, my activities, not just the ends but the means of my life, how are they in keeping with the common good? And those would be the questions that an ethical person would try to keep in front of them. And so what we begin to see is that ethics has some answers, but my own experience is that ethics invites questions into our lives and asks us to be awake on a regular basis. Just one small aside, I like to think about ethics not just in the grand things, but in the everyday things. So ethics in everyday life might look something like this. You know, on your way back to your chalet, if you see a piece of litter on the ground, do you pick it up? Why? Because it doesn't belong there. You didn't put it there. You didn't create the harm. But are you willing to offer aid to the village? Pick up that piece of litter and take it not just to any trash container, but the right one. Is it recyclable, burnable, you know? So how could that help us? Imagine that, if that became a habit, that any time you were walking somewhere, you saw a piece of litter and picked it up and put it in the trash, and you allowed that to become habits. In ethics, we talk about habits and how habits build virtue over time. Think about that. The habit of picking up litter that you didn't throw might over time help us to realize that in a society, especially a democracy, we're invited to take responsibility for problems that we didn't cause. And just that small act of picking up litter that we didn't throw prepares us. Nobody would go to the gym tomorrow, I think, very few of us in this room, and sit down at a bunch of weights and try to press 250 pounds. You know, most of us would not do that successfully. I'm looking around at some of the young guys, maybe they would, but most of us would not. We'd be wise to go to the gym, maybe put on 15 or 20 pounds if you've not been lifting weights in a while, and to get onto that weight and lift it gently and lift it slowly and do it a number of times and do that regularly for a week, and after a week add 5 more pounds. And over time, we get ready for the heavy lifting. So by paying attention to ethics and the small stuff, I like to say when the pop quiz from the universe comes, when the big stuff comes our way, and we really have some big ethical decisions to make, we'll be prepared for them because we paid attention to the light lifting. Okay? So I think that's all I want to say about ethics. Keeping an eye on the clock, I'd like to get us into an activity. Let me just stop and see if there's any comments or questions. Linda.
Yes, I have a question. You have under virtue here, striving to do what is right and good. How do you determine that? What is right and good?
Yeah, that's the whole process of ethical decision making. I mean, it's a whole another seminar, but I mean, that's exactly what ethical decision making is about. And just a brief word about that. If we have a choice, and it really is about two rights, how do I choose between this right and this right? We would call that a moral dilemma or an ethical dilemma. And those are difficult choices because how do you choose between two rights? That's a whole nother seminar, but there's literally a process we can go through. The answer is to look for a third way. So if you have a choice here between justice and mercy, the answer to the dilemma is don't choose. Try to find a solution that is both just and merciful. There's another type of challenge that befalls us, I think, more regularly, and upon early examination, it looks like an ethical dilemma, because you think you have something right in this hand, and you think you have something right in this hand, but upon closer examination, you know, one of them begins to stink. And at that point, we don't have an ethical dilemma, we have what others in the field would call a moral temptation. And the answer in a moral temptation is always do the right thing, but because of my capacity for self-deception, and if you're like me, you may have that too, you know, I sometimes try to legitimize a wrong choice by pretending it's an ethical dilemma when it's not. The ultimate difficulty in this whole realm is not right versus right, but some ethical dilemmas, and I don't want to go into this too far, are wrong versus wrong. You know, if you saw the movie Sophie's Choice, you know, that's sort of about the ultimate ethical dilemma. And in that case, what we're trying to do is to choose the one that does least harm. You know, some docs, some neurosurgeons face that every day. Now you're really tempting me. I believe that our inability to have constructive conversations around the abortion question in society has to do with the fact that it really is a choice about two wrongs. And we have not found enough graciousness in our collective lives together to publicly own that. And in that context of saying, when it's a choice between two wrongs, how should we deal with that? That's just a humble opinion. So it's a whole other topic, but it's a fascinating topic. Any other comments or questions just about these definitions for the moment? Let's dive in and do something together. Let's could you flip that sheet of paper over? And we're going to make this part of the integrity test, okay? If you borrow a pencil or pen, get it back. Does anybody need a pen or pencil, or you'll need one, or a good memory? So let's start. Whoops. Let's start three back that way. Okay. There's quite a few answers. There you go. Anybody in the back?
Could you throw a couple up here?
Sure. You get that heads up. Do you have a pen? Okay. One in the back. Okay. Heads up back there.
Okay.
I don't have any more, so if you don't have a pen or pencil at this point, you're going to... Let me suggest a way to get through this. First of all, is there anybody in the room with two pencils or pens? Okay. Yeah, the markers will work. Good idea.
I can cheat.
You want to have your own pen?
Yeah, have your own pen. Yeah, there's nothing magic about holding pens.
They're all old. Oh, we want a green one.
Okay, we'll count that as a mortal temptation.
I'll take one.
Okay, Larry, long toss. You ready? Okay. Okay. That was afternoon aerobics. Now into the... For this next activity, you're going to need a pen or pencil or a very good memory. But even if you don't have a pen or pencil, you'll probably make it through. Does anybody not have a blue sheet? Okay. So, it'll be the only time during this hour together that I'm going to ask you to do something privately and silently. And I know that some of you are in close quarters back there, so I just ask you to nonetheless try to do this silently and privately. And it's for your benefit. The more privately and silently you do this, the more powerful this activity will be for you. Okay. We're going to be going through a series of choices. This whole realm is about choices. And I want to give you a couple precautions. This is all about preventing harm and offering aid, okay? No matter how difficult your week has been, even if you hiked in from Stehekin, I promise you that this might be one of the more difficult things that you've done all week. Okay? Just from experience, I think you might find this challenging. So that's sort of telling the truth. The hope I'd like to point to is that I believe if you work hard to successfully complete this activity, you might discover something about yourself. What you will discover about yourself, you might regard as some of the more important something that you've discovered about yourself in a while. So there'll be struggle, but a reward is coming. I'm going to encourage you that in addition to using your head, trust your heart, trust your gut or your intuition, trust your spirit as additional sources of wisdom. Don't take this on just as an intellectual activity. And then finally, if it helps, please feel free to moan and groan throughout the entire process. Okay? I like to tell leaders that, you know, you'll either create a climate where people will dare to moan and groan in front of you, or they'll talk about you in parking lots. and it's your choice, okay? So here we go. The first step is not about taking away anything. The first step is about personalizing this list. Because if I were you, I would invite you to be suspicious about this list. Because you didn't create it. These words on this sheet may or may not be values for you. So take a look at it and ask yourself, think about the wholeness of your life, not just you at work, but think about you at home, in the neighborhood, the religious institution you might consider home. And ask yourself, you know, what else do you care about? Think about relationships that you have. And take a moment now and add those to the list. So go ahead and do that. And already I have to watch the time a little bit. I think I went a little over that 20 minutes. So I won't rush you, but we also are going to sort of move through this quickly. There's a few more markers if anybody wants one. Okay. One more. Sorry, I didn't see you in the back, so maybe you can share.
Bill, could I get the sheet, please?
Yep. Anybody else need a blue sheet? Okay, great. Would you pass that to Teresa? Okay, take just about another 45 seconds or so to ask yourself, what else would you like to add to this list?
Anthony, one more?
No. More seconds. Okay. We're going to be heading in the opposite direction now. And again, remember to consult, in addition to your head, your heart, your intuition, and spirit as additional sources of wisdom. So would you please take the entire list now. There were 18 words in the list originally. You may have added one, or you may have added 10. It doesn't matter. Take your entire list, including the ones you've added, and would you please now reduce your list to 10? Okay? Try to do this privately and silently, especially if you're sitting near a spouse or partner. By the way, as you're doing that, I always forget to do it. The bookstore has asked us to do these commercials. I prefer to see it as a public service announcement. These two books are in the bookstore, one on ethical leadership, one on the spirituality of leadership. If you're interested, there's some over at the bookstore. See if you can conclude this in about one more minute. Okay, trust your gut, trust your intuition. You might circle those you prefer more, X out those you prefer less, however you want to do it. Thank you. Okay. If you're not quite there yet, don't worry, because I think you'll catch up in this step. Would you please take your list of 10, and now would you please reduce it to 5? And that was good moaning and groaning by some of you. Yeah, that was good. That was good. And some of you don't need encouragement. On your way to 5. Okay. Who needs 20 seconds? Okay, let's take 20, see how far that takes us. You're doing great. Let's keep up our speed. Would you please now take your list of 5, and would you reduce it to 3? Now, here is something I forgot to introduce. This activity fits into a family of activities called Challenge by Choice. Okay? Only you can make the choice to take the challenge, to try to complete this process. If you do, I promise you hard work. You're in the midst of that. And the reward is coming. And you'll make it to the end only if you choose to take the challenge.
How are we going to?
3.
Heading for 3.
Get ready.
Let's do this as privately and as silently as possible. We're almost there. Okay. And final step, I promise. Would you take your list of 3 and would you reduce it to 2? Good groaning. Who would like 10 seconds? Okay. Yeah. Trust your intuition, trust your gut, trust your heart. I would like to do a little bit with this work that we've just done, but also try to get to the concept of integrity just briefly. If we don't quite get there fully, we can pick up on it tomorrow. But if you successfully made it through this process, then at the Center for Ethical Leadership, where I work, we would say that you just discovered, or very likely given this group, rediscovered your core values. Your core values, the values at the heart of your other values. You see, because nobody in this room has only 2 values. Okay? We all have a larger set of values than 2. So why ask you to go through a very difficult process to get to 2 if you have a larger set than 2? And I think there's a couple good reasons. One of the reasons why 2 is democracy. You had a chance to add 2 to your list. And now you have discovered 2. It's possible that everybody in this room now has a different final 2 than everybody else. That's what makes values appropriate in a public setting. Other forms of values can become values in collocation. This process, a discovery process, invites people to pay attention to their own personal history, family traditions, experiences, and to make their own choices. That's what makes this process appropriate in a public context. The second reason why 2 is simpler than that is that we can remember 2. And at the Center for Ethical Leadership, this is what we think ethical leadership is. Do you know your core values, and do you have the courage and discipline to integrate them into your daily life? Do you know your core values, and do you have the courage and discipline to make them a part of your daily decision-making? And we think that the twofold reward for that over time, if you can imagine this, if you did this over time, not just a week, but a month, a year, but imagine a decade of trying to live each day in the context of your core values, we think the twofold reward for that over time is happiness and integrity. Not happiness as popular culture promises, but a deeper form of happiness, and I think you probably know what I mean by that. And integrity, I think we'll say more about that in a bit. I'd like to do two quick things with this list before we move on to the concept of integrity. And again, these blend into each other. If we don't do it today, we'll get to it tomorrow. If you're leaving, I apologize, and we'll find, if you live in the Seattle area, another opportunity for you to do that. So let's do this. How about just, I'm going to ask three of you to join me for the sake of time. Normally I would do more. But in just a moment, I'm going to ask three of you to stand. I'd like it to be a cross-section as much as three can be a cross-section of the room. Some gender diversity, age diversity. I'll go first. What you're simply going to do is to tell the group your name and your top two core values. Okay? So could I have three, please, volunteer to join me as soon as you're ready. Go ahead and stand up. Thanks. Okay?
My name is
Wayne. Hang on for one sec. I didn't give a clear instruction. We're going to stand first, then I'll go first, and then we'll go around the room. Could two more please join us? Okay, go ahead, Beth, and in the back. Okay, great. So I'll go first. We'll start in the back. We'll come to Beth, and we'll end with you. Okay? And what you're going to do is tell the group your name and your core values. Okay? My name is Bill Grace, and my core values are faith and love.
My name is Rolf Olson. My core values are joy and love.
My name is Beth Crow, and my core values are love and justice.
My name is Lane Morell, and my core values are integrity and happiness.
Great. Thanks. Have a seat. I wish at this moment we had a longer period of time together, because I'd like to spend a lot of time examining what just happened with those three individuals who volunteered. So I will just... But I believe this, that what you just witnessed, what we all just witnessed, I believe to be the most courageous acts of ethical leadership or citizenship that you will ever observe. In those three examples, I believe that they are the most courageous acts of ethical leadership or citizenship that you will ever observe, because three of our fellow villagers had the courage to do this, to stand up in public and give their names, bless you, and then tell a group of their peers from the heart what they stand for. And you see, no act of leadership or citizenship can ever require more of us than that. It simply cannot. It can't. Someone once said that half of leadership is showing up. The question is, what happens when the setting changes? Can you stand up for those two words as the setting changes? Can you stand up for those two words as the audience changes? Can you stand up for those two words as the stakes change? And can you stand up for those two words as the risks change? Another way, briefer way of saying that is, regardless of setting or circumstance, ethical leadership asks us, calls us, to stand up for those two words, regardless. And we learn to do that over time by practicing ethics in the small stuff. Could love just ask us to hold the door open for somebody heading into the dining hall? That's love in the small stuff. Pay attention to that on a daily basis. And when the larger call comes, we might be ready for it. I'd like to try one other small activity. But before I press on, I need to say this. Some of you, when you were at 10, heading to 5, some of you began to think like this. You know what? I don't have to give up this word. You know, this word fits under this word, and that word fits under this word. You know, the cluster technique, like a cluster of grapes. It doesn't matter what technique you use. Probably several techniques were used in this room. But what matters is that you organize this list. And you see, the two words that we just heard three of our fellow villagers mention, those two words, in all of our cases, stand for a larger set of words. So if you remember two, you probably take 10 in a very convenient carrying case. And so do yourself a favor. I have a Native American friend who lives in the Seattle area who says this. In Native culture, they say if you'd like a new habit, do something intentionally, consciously, make a conscious choice, do something intentionally for 28 days. Anybody have a hunch why 28 days? Yeah, thanks, Janet. The lunar cycle, 28 days. You say anything, you know, a new exercise program, flossing, whatever you'd like. You know, do something for 28 days, not a new habit. Think about this. You chose these words freely among all of the words in the world because I didn't limit you to the English language when you began to add. So among all of the words in the world, you chose these two. Why not honor them by trying to have them connect with your behavior on a daily basis? So take this list with you. If it's too conspicuous, tear off a portion of it and write those two words down. If you're in the village for one more day, let that be the first of your 28. If you're volunteering the rest of the summer, Holton Village is going to be a wonderful place for you to practice living out of these words on a daily basis. If you got one more week here, great. When you leave the village, you just have 21 more days to practice these words consciously, and then you'll have a new habit. Okay. So, all right, I have to do one more thing. We're probably most likely to get to integrity tomorrow, okay? But I need to do this. I want to demonstrate this so that if you want to do this for your family or for your home congregation, there's nothing copywritten about this. There's extra copies here. Take one, copy it. Do it at home and see what happens. Because if we think that core values are the cornerstone of ethical leadership, we sort of had a hunch about that before we began doing our work about a decade or so ago, that core values would be at the heart, a cornerstone of sorts for those who wanted to nurture ethical leadership in their lives on a daily basis. What we're discovering, though, is that core values might have also something to say about the type of community that we want to live in. And I'm never sure if this is going to work, and I want to pay attention to the balcony as we do this. But what I'm about to do is to mention some words. I'm just going to mention some words. If they're among your top two, would you please then stand and remain standing? So I'll mention a word, take a look at your top two core values. If the word I mention is among those top two, then you will be one of those to stand, okay? And what I'm going to do is mention a couple words. I'll see how many people are standing. And then I'm going to do some window shopping. If you're sitting down, don't take that personally. You know, it's just, it's a matter of chronology. It's not right or wrong. Somebody will be the first to stand. No prizes for that. You know, somebody will be the last to stand. No penalties for that. So, as a matter of fact, everybody, you know, you can choose to be kind to whoever the last person is going to be, because in a moral context, it could be you. And you will have chosen to be nice to yourself. Okay, so I'll mention some words. If they're among your top two core values, please stand and then remain standing. I didn't notice any mobility impairments in the room, and tired doesn't count. Okay. All right, here we go. Love. Let's take a look around. Family. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit. How about integrity? Okay, I'm going to do some window shopping now. Harold, could you tell me your top two, but don't stand just yet.
Authenticity and trustworthiness.
Okay, and mine?
Faith and duty.
Faith and duty. I'll be right back. Linda,
justice and grace.
Justice and grace. Is there a neighbor of yours who is not standing? Is there anybody? Am I missing anyone?
There.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Faith and justice.
Faith and justice. Okay. Is there anybody else that I'm missing back there in particular?
Upstairs.
Okay, what are your top two?
Freedom / independence and harmony with others.
Okay. Of your top two, what do you want to stand for?
Faithfulness.
Okay. And mine was one of yours, faithfulness. Okay, would you stand together then? And Harold, among your top two, what do you want to stand for?
Authenticity.
Stand for authenticity. And let's go up to the balcony first. What would you like to stand for?
Peace.
Peace. Stand for peace. And Linda, what would you like to stand for?
Grace.
Stand for grace. Okay. Well, it took seven words to unite this group. Here's what I'd like you to consider. Of all of the words in the world, it took seven words to unite this group. And you might be thinking, well, what's the big deal? You know, we're holding it after all. You know, isn't that why we come here? We care about this stuff. We stand for this stuff. And I'd say, yep, you're right. We do. We are. But would you be surprised to know that in the last 12 years, maybe 15 now, that it's never taken more than 10 words to unite any group? The largest group to stand so far for seven words is a group of eight words is a group of 2,000. The smallest number of words it's ever taken to unite a group is one, and that united a group of 80. That group brought us in because they said, we don't think we have anything in common anymore. And it's always the same words. Love, family, integrity, peace, grace, I've not heard in a while, authenticity, faith. Did I miss one?
Grace.
Freedom. Imagine this. I'm going to try to recall the ones we use now. And what I'd like you to do is to imagine a church. Or imagine, better yet, a place where you might work. A place marked by love and family and integrity and faith and grace and authenticity and peace. Did I miss anyone's word that you're standing for? What would it be like to worship there? What would it be like to work there? And the truth is, we're in charge. If we want a worship community marked by these words, then all you have to do is to begin to live out of them on a daily basis, and you bring that gift to that community. Some of the work that has surprised me, have a seat, please. Some of the work that has surprised me the most in the last decade is the degree to which people in the corporate sector are interested in this message. I won't name names, but major corporations these days are asking us on a repeated basis to do work with them. When I ask the question, it's the same words, love, family, integrity, peace, justice. You know, do you want to work there? And they say yes. And then the question is, how much is your current workplace like that? And what they begin to see is that there's a gap between what they would prefer in their heart of heart and what exists. And that's not a moral problem, that's a leadership opportunity. You see, because we are the shapers of our own lives, not just individually, but collectively. Holden is an intentional choice, right? Holden is not an accident. Holden is an intentional choice to be a particular type of community. It's possible. People come. I've met people this week from Boston. That's remarkable. That people would come across the country, come to this little village up in the wilderness, because there's something special here. If we believe it's here and we can't take it with us, we can't construct it where we are, then I think we're missing something vital about life. We can. And moving beyond moral and ethical for a moment, the Spirit works with us to create the community marked by love and family, and justice, and peace, and grace, and authenticity, and faith. Those are things that I think the Spirit would not in favor of. So we don't even labor alone as we imagine taking this with us.
I think I'd like to stop there. We will get to integrity tomorrow. Okay, we've been talking about integrity, of course, the whole time. But, you know, with just a few minutes left, I'll hang around a little extra. What would you like to say? What would you like to talk about? Yes, Harold.
Yeah. Instead of saying offering the good, if you would say preventing evil or harm and promoting good, would that
sure
change the equation?
Would it change the equation? Prevent harm and offer aid. Sure, I think it makes the good more active. So I think that's a good insight. Thank you. Yeah, otherwise it could be a sort of passive formula. There's a little aside. There's a middle school that I know of now. I was doing a workshop there, and I recommended to the teachers that if they wanted to do an experiment, they would only need two rules for the young people to live by, because they had about 40 rules, and it was hard for the young people to remember all of these. And, you know, it's the difference between... I'll just try to do this quickly. Anybody in this room have any children that went through scouting, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts? Do you remember when they'd come home with those little merit badges? They had a little sort of sticky side in the back with some glue, and on an evening that was rushed, you would take out the iron and iron the patch onto the sash. And what happened to those patches?
They fell off.
You know, a less busy evening, you could iron them on for a moment and then stitch them in, and those were the ones that were likely to stay as part of the fabric. So where was I going with this? Can anybody help me with my...
you don't want this exercise to be the quick iron-on.
No. What was I saying?
Number of rules.
Thanks. You see, those rules are like iron-on patches. Somebody else came up with the rules, and these young people are asked to iron-on 50, and they begin to fall off. So I invited them to offer the young people two rules that could be sewn on by making daily decisions. And the two rules are always help, never hurt. And they decided to try an entire year asking young people to live that way. You see, rather than a set of rules, what young people become responsible for is making ethical decisions, moral choices each day. Is what I'm about to do going to help or hurt? If it's going to hurt, then what we've agreed to in community is that we won't do it. If it's going to help, then I should do it. Harold, I think it becomes more active at that point. You know, think about a family. Think about a congregation. Think about a mosque. You know, wouldn't that be interesting? Just all we need would be two rules that would at least keep us on the straight and narrow. Always help, never hurt. Now, those are subtle choices, again, and some people might come down on different sides of the equation. How about one or two more comments or questions before we go? Gary.
Is there a reason you didn't put faith on there while you attended?
No. I actually just thought of these words one very late night in front of a computer, and it's whatever words spilled out. So it was not intentional either way. But I get asked that a lot. What were your top two, Gary?
Truth and integrity.
Truth and integrity.
But to me, they kind of overlap.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed that I didn't think of faith and add it to my list.
Well, you know,
integrity and faith.
I'm really glad you said this. It's because there's nothing at this point. I hurried you through a reflection process. If you've heard somebody else's value and said, "Gee, that word speaks more fully to what I want to care about," then change it. You know, eventually, you know, if you spend a little bit more time with this, you'll come to a couple words. Mine have shifted a little bit as big experiences have come my way. Becoming a parent and the empty nest both caused some words to move onto my list and one to move off of my list. But more and more, I think I've found some words that speak to me. And you'll find yours, but you know, I rushed you through it. Don't be locked into these yet. You can do some window shopping while you're here. But a couple of weeks, you'll settle into a couple that'll feel right, and maybe in a year you'll make some minor choices. Don't worry about that. But in the meantime, test drive them by living out of them for the next 28 days, and see what it feels like to live your life marked by these words. Gary.
Yeah. Have you ever done this with a group of people that you might expect to have different values, like a group of prisoners? Or
sure. Not prisoners yet, but on several occasions, homeless youth. And the only other word you need in this group for them to be standing with you is friendship. And you can imagine why friendship is important for adolescents and in general, and homeless youth in particular. Friendship is vital. So, but I've been asked several times, have I ever done this with prison inmates, and I'd like to do it. If you're in a position to do it, again, there's nothing copywritten about it, do it. My guess is that you'll see no difference. I've also had a chance to do this in one international setting, a number of multicultural settings, but one international setting with about 8 other countries represented. That's not enough of a bit of action research to conclude anything, but in that setting, nothing shifted. It was the same words that people stand for. So I am of the opinion that there is a truth about us, and that is that we are all one global family, and in our heart of hearts, we aspire to the same things. A friend of mine puts it this way: in the final analysis, most humans only want 3 things. Someone to love, somebody to love them in return, and enough money to go on picnics with those people. So imagine this, and see if in your spiritual imagination, if you think God would smile on this. So tap into your spiritual imagination and imagine this. Imagine the whole planet, that every family has enough water, fresh water, enough food to avoid hunger or chronic malnutrition, shelter, basic health care, and access to basic education, in particular the ability to read, so they can learn about the history and traditions of their people. Imagine that, and then imagine that that same family all over the world had enough additional resources to go on picnics together. I begin to believe that that is a picture of a redeemed world. And the truth is, in this global culture we live in, we could be architects of that too. And your core values may guide you in that direction. One more for the road, and I wanted to call in a hand we haven't seen yet. Was there another hand I've missed?
I was wondering what polis.
Oh, polis. Okay. Polis is a Greek word meaning city. You can probably hear it in some cities. You know, Minneapolis, Indianapolis. If you're a Superman fan, Metropolis. You know, and it's the polis in Greek society was where the diverse community gathered. Okay. And that's where we think when, if you take a look at that, where vision becomes voice, where visions become real, when they get legs, when they begin to take action, that those would be best meted out, visited, decided upon in the polis, the place where the people in their diversity gather. It's my critique in particular that too many decisions these days get made in clubs. That's the opposite of the polis. The club is where the diverse community is not welcome. We have several in Seattle, the Washington Athletic Club, the Rainier Club. There's one in Bellevue called the Bellevue Athletic Club. Too many decisions get made in clubs, and in democracy of the people, we would try to make more and more decisions in the polis. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, where is it? Where would we go today in modern culture to find the polis? One of the closest places we might find, someone might say, is Starbucks. But that assumes you can spend $3 on a cup of coffee, you know. So then where is the polis? Where would we go to gather in diversity? We know where to gather here, don't we, in this community? We know where the community gathers at least once a day. And we call that something else, because this is not just a secular community. But in Holden, we know where to gather. Ask yourself, do you know where to gather in your community? If you need to go, feel free, I'm over. We can stop the tape. And if you don't know if you have a polis, that would be a wonderful thing to begin to think about. How could we create one in your community? Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay.